Greetings, pals. It's me, Dee Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and this might be my favorite episode of the year, though I don't want to choose favorites. Dr. Benji Epstein is here with us today, but before we dive into this mystical episode, I got to tell you, the other night I was at a show, and I started making out with these three beautiful producers who are creating one of my favorite shows, Forever Home. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's that show about celebrity morticians, kind of like Hell's Kitchen, but for morticians. And they were so turned on by my ability to French kiss that they agreed to give the DTFH an exclusive sneak peek of the next season of Forever Home. And here it is.
Previously on Forever Home, mortician master Darius Weiss made history.
For the first time ever, the morticians will be all-stars.
By inviting back 16 all-star morticians with the greatest prize ever on the line.
One of you will become the head mortician at the brand new Forever Home Mortuary in Las Vegas!
A new Forever Home Mortuary on the Vegas Strip? You can roll the dice that I'm gonna be the head mortician there.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, especially if you die in a bear.
Stop singing! What these contestants don't know is that they aren't on Forever Home, but are subjects in America's favorite government experiment show, Bohemian Grove! 11 of the planet's top evil scientists have been assembled on an island in Florida and paired with 11 death row prisoners whose memories have been erased and replaced with artificial ones. They think they're contestants on a game show about celebrity morticians and have no idea they're on Bohemian Grove! Whichever scientist can transform their prisoner into the ultimate assassin will get invited to the Bohemian Grove!
And now we join test subject David Glerson in his hotel room, where he thinks he's having a private conversation with his terminally ill grandfather. Of course, it's not his grandfather. It's Professor Zeldick from Prager University who must keep Glerson from remembering his true identity.
No, the show's going great, Grandpa. I had to embalm a dude who got run over by a crane today, and your master mortician, Darius, said I made him look better than he did before he got ran over by that crane.
That's great, Davey. You're always the best embalmer in the family.
But maybe it's the stress of the show or something, but I'm having these memories that aren't mine.
Like what?
Like I was on death row or something. That they put me there because I crucified a priest in a church and then burned it down. It was just horrible. I feel like I'm losing my marbles, Gramps. Maybe it's the stress of the show. I'm thinking about quitting.
You can't quit. You want to make your dying grandpa proud, don't you?
Yeah, of course I do, Gramps.
Good. Look, even if the memories were real, let's say, it's not so bad that you killed that priest. It's that you got caught. Look, just forget these phantom memories and get back to winning that show. Any way you can.
What? What are you saying?
I mean, any way you can. Those phantom memories, you should think of them like dreams. And sometimes dreams show us things that we're capable of. Things that we don't want to accept about ourselves.
Yeah, you know, when you put it like that, Gramps, it did feel kind of good. Choking the life out of that dumb old priest. It was like I was myself for a second.
Only a brave man could admit that. It would be a shame if some of the other contestants had little accidents that took them out of the show.
Oh, yeah. Like what I did to that priest in that faint memory. Drag him into a church, strangle him, burn the whole thing down.
Yeah, but this time, don't get caught.
Like do it in secret? That's even better.
And what's even better than that is if you're listening to this, you're on Bohemian Grove. You're having this podcast pumped into your consciousness while you lay in an induced coma, getting your memories wiped. Activate Kilgore Protocol. Activate Kilgore Protocol.
Wow, looks like it's going to be a killer season. If you want to watch Forever Home, aka Bohemian Grove, it is streaming on Hulu, the new streaming platform featuring some of the most cutting-edge reality shows out there. All you got to do is go to Hulu, LL943, Kilgore Protocol Activated.gov. Use offer code Duncan and you will get one free month of some of the best reality shows out there. Again, it's offer code Duncan for one free month on Hulu. And now we have got an incredible podcast. Dr. Benji Epstein is here. We're going to jump right into it. But first this. The wait is almost over. A new football season is about to begin. Get ready for the NFL Week 1 action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To celebrate the return of football, DraftKings is giving new customers a can't-miss offer. Bet just $5 on any football game and get $200 in free bets instantly. Want more action for opening night? Everyone can experience the thrill of DraftKings' early win promotion. Get up seven, you win. Bet on any NFL team of your choice, and if your team leads by 7 points at any point during the game, you get paid instantly, even if your team loses. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code Duncan to get $200 in free bets instantly when you place a $5 bet on any football game. That's code Duncan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details. Darlings, would you like commercial-free episodes of the DTFH? Then go no further than patreon.com/DTFH. You're going to get commercial-free episodes. You're going to get the opportunity to hang out with your true family once a week. We got a meditation group. We have our family gatherings every Friday. And I'm excited to announce that this coming Friday, September 9th, we're going to be gathering together to plan out our next book. Yes, we write books together. And if you want to participate in that, we would love it. All you got to do is subscribe at patreon.com/DTFH. Also, I got some comedy shows coming up that I would love to see you at. Come and see me. I am going to be at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. That is September 23rd to the 24th. I'm going to be at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City, September 30th, and Hyenas, Fort Worth, Texas. And here's a special announcement. On the 17th, if you want to see me in Austin, I'll be doing an hour at Vulcan Gas Works. All those ticket links are at duncantrussell.com. Today's guest is one of my favorite people on earth. He has to be. He's my rabbi. He's also a psychologist, an author who's written a wonderful book called Living in the Presence, a Jewish mindfulness guide to everyday life. And also, many, many years ago, we were in a band together. We talk about that in this episode, and that's not all we talk about. We talk about how deep Judaism is. I mean, maybe it's impossible to talk about how deep it is, but I always have Buddhists on, I always have spiritualists on or comedians on, but I don't give the Jews enough DTFH time, and that is doing everyone a disservice, especially me. If you're not familiar with Judaism, this is going to blow your mind. Want to talk about the Kabbalah? It's in this episode. Want to talk about the Tree of Life? It's in this episode. Want to talk about the time-space continuum and the way the divine breathes life into it? it's in this episode. Everybody strap in and welcome back to the DTFH, Dr. Ben Epstein.
Harini Nakasher Atzmenu. This is in Hebrew, and then if you want me to translate it into the English, but Harini Nakasher Atzmenu with the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. L'chol ha'tzadikim ha'amitim shebedorenu, u'l'chol ha'tzadikim ha'amitim sho'chnei afar, kidoshim asher ba'aretz hema. Uvifrat l'Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Tzadik Yisod Olam Nachal, Novea Mekor Chochma, Rabbi Nachman Ben Feiga, Schuso Yogan Alenu, Va'al Kol Yisrael, Amen.
Amen.
So we just bound ourselves to through this service of this podcast, to all the righteous people in our generation, and to all the righteous who are no longer in the living with us, but you know, all attached in the vortex of life, who reside in the earth, and specifically our tzaddik, our rabbi, the foundation of the world, the flowing brook, the source of wisdom, Rabbi Nachman ben Feiga, Nachman the son of Feiga. May their merit be a meritorious for us and for all of Israel and the world. Amen.
Cool, I love that.
Oh, yes. We started strong.
Y'all go so deep. It is wild. The language itself is so beautiful. You know what it sounds a little like? And I'm sure the reason it sounds like that is because it was intentional. But we've been rewatching Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And they speak High Valyrian called. Yeah. And that's definitely what it sounds like. It sounds so close to that I have no question, but whoever formulated that language was Jewish and could speak Hebrew and just took that
and speak to dragons. No, my wife is definitely a Khaleesi. That's for sure. She's it. I think.
Well,
I don't know.
Can here's something that I heard from someone on the Patreon, my friend Valo. He told me, and I don't know where he got the data from, but I found it to be so beautiful that the name of God, Yahweh, is actually how do you spell it? There's no vowels in it.
The English doesn't do it justice, but it's Yud, He, Vav, and He. Those are the four Hebrew letters that make up God's name, and we could spend a lifetime on it. We could spend a lifetime on it.
Well, let's start. He was telling me that, and I don't know where he got the data from, but that it's the sound of breathing, that it's the exhalation and the inhalation. Have you heard this before?
I've definitely seen this, you know, the yud, and because the hay makes it like an H sound. And there are people who are doing Abulafian meditations with the different, and they're taking the letters and the way they, I'm not a linguist, the way we vowelize letters in Hebrew, they're like little dots. And the dots are the movements. These are the tenuot, the movements, and the kisufim, the longings. And so you'll take the yud, the y sound, and you'll do it with an ah, ya, and then each letter like that. And, you know, focusing on a different part of the body, and then an E, you know, and each one of those vowels is also connected to a Kabbalistic sphere, is connected to, you know, loving kindness or severity or beauty and splendor and all the other different ones. It's taking it down.
So is the tree of, no, not taking it down. I was making a gesture thinking of like the tree of life.
Yes.
Is the tree of life somehow encapsulated in that name?
Are we allowed to talk about Midnight Gospel and the fact that you were going to animate me as a corned beef sandwich with earlocks and that sort of
Yeah, I would.
Can that still happen?
Sadly, at least not in the not as have the Midnight Gospel.
Have we processed this? Is this something that needs to be processed, or you've moved on? You're living in the moment, and it's just like, because people are brokenhearted. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. You know, I was bummed, but I knew, like, you know, if it's not happening again before they tell you it's not going to happen. So I have plenty of time to sort of go through all the phases of grief, the stages of grief mixed in with the gratitude that they let me make it, mixed in with a kind of pining over like, man, I really wanted to get more into that world and there was more of a story. But right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry people are brokenhearted about it. I think we all just have to be grateful that they let us make it. I mean, like getting a show like that made is impossible. Like the fact that they let us do it is just wild that they would be like, oh yeah, sure, let's make this weird, psychedelic, mystical, rambling thing. They let us do it. So that's, to me, I'm happy with that.
I remember when you tried to introduce, or you didn't try, when you introduced it on Joe and Joe Rogan, and you know, he's just looking at it like, how did you get them to greenlight this?
I know. Well, it's Pendleton. They wanted to work with Pendleton. He got us through the door. But yeah, the name of God.
The name of God.
This name of God is, it's a map.
It's a sound. It's the map. It's the sound. It's the building block. It's everything that every single Kabbalistic intention is going back to. And there's so many permutations, and there's so many combinations, and there's so many different systems of you know, it's coming from, well, let's, coming from the Zohar, which is the hidden wisdom, the esoteric wisdom, which was, you know, that's the first book. And then there was a sage in the 1500s. Oh, God, I hope nobody's listening to this who knows what they're talking about. 1600s, who also formulated a system from that. So there's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And it's good to say names of the righteous. So we're just saying Shemos HaTzadikim here. Names of the righteous. It's just going to bring lots of good things here. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai wrote the Zohar. And then the Ari, the Rabbi Yitzchak Luria in Sfat in the mid-1500s, systemized it, cataloged it, and created the Tree of Life, that system that you're familiar with. And then that was subsequently explicated more on a more accessible level by the Baal Shem Tov, who makes it more about, instead of focusing on what's going on in the spiritual realms, more how it transposes onto ourselves and our body, and how we can, you know, as above, so below, and so how we're really, you know, the way the system works is we have real input, and what we do matters, you know. And so the Kabbalistic spheres can be mapped onto our bodies and that sort of thing.
So that's Malkuth. How do you say it? Malkuth? Keither?
We're going to say it OG. We're going to say Keser. Okay. Keser makes it so much easier. Keser. Because you're going to do the more Eastern European pronunciation. So it doesn't do the it changes it.
Keser.
Keser. Yes. We just said Keser on a podcast.
Keser is the crown.
Keser is the crown. Then there's
Keser
the wisdom.
Represent heaven. Yeah, that's like, if we're going to talk about just the heaven and earth, I mean, in the Taoist sense, or the idea of light, or the Buddhist sense, heaven and earth. Keser is heaven, Malkuth is earth, and this is the way heaven and earth.
This is the
talk
way the connection. And then there's the connection between Tiferet, splendor and Malchut, or Yesod and Malchut, which is the foundation. And you'll see the different body parts are so in line with them. And we're actually coming, I was just thinking, I mean, we connected, our relationship started in that cover band, in the Fergus Blanders cover band.
Fergus Blanders. I remember that.
The Red Hot Chili Blanders.
Yeah, right. It was so thrilling to find out you are also a fan of Fergus Blanders, because you never run, a lot of people have never heard of him. So
never
really
even heard
cool
of him. And now the mad rush right now to be Googling this. And if you guys find out, the Red Hot Chili Blanders band.
Yeah, it's out there.
It's out there too. It's all out there and it's some part of the multiverse. No, but it's,
I like
it's,
to think Fergus Blanders is out there somewhere, you know, that there. He's there. He's probably dead, but I don't like to, imagine.
If Elvis could still make it through that, then for sure Fergus Blanders is.
Right. And you really believe he might still be alive? Because I just feel like, you know, sometimes I like to pretend Elvis is alive. But
why not?
We all know he's...
But there's still, you know... But maybe not. Maybe not. But it would be nice. You could still talk to him sometime. No.
No one even knows how old he is. So, I mean, it's theoretical that he could... He seemed timeless in the sense that every picture that you can find out there, he seems old.
He's the same. He doesn't age. He's the secret of Elvis.
That's what it seems like.
But I'm going to tell you how our relationship, you know, because the band didn't work out and you sort of drifted, and how we really rekindled it is that
I didn't drift. I drifted. I didn't drift.
You're always
Why do you
right
always
there?
Say I drifted?
You're always right there.
Okay. I got busy. Okay. I got busy. I'll be honest with you. I couldn't bear the heartbreak of having his words come out of my mouth and knowing that probably he's gone. That's why it was hurting too much. And the thing you're calling a drift was my own grief. It was me just trying to get to a place where I could accept the fact that I probably will never see him live.
Right. And what we need to appreciate is that he did exist. You know, that it did happen. It's similar to the way you want to approach the gospel. It's just like, we just have to appreciate the fact that we were in the presence of something.
Right.
Any exposure to it. It's like, and we want more. We're so clingy. It's just like, just appreciate the fact that you got to hear Fergus, you know?
Some people
can't hear Fergus.
Now, this is, you know, to connect to what we were talking to before, the Tree of Life and Fergus Blanders. You just gave me some new information about that. Somehow I assumed that that system, the Tree of Life, had existed for thousands of years. I didn't know that it was created in the 1500s, so that there was a time, just like there was a time before the existence of Fergus Blanders, where no one had heard it, where he wasn't born yet, where maybe his grandfathers were, or great-great-great-grandfathers were around. But similarly, the Tree of Life, the components that would eventually become the Tree of Life were floating out there, but the connection, the thing that connected all of them hadn't happened yet. That's fascinating to me. I thought we were talking about something that goes all the way back.
Well, it depends on which camp you want to be a part of. You want to be in part of the camp that's, you know, more academic and says, okay, this is nice, but, you know, we could probably trace this to, or you're in the right side of history where it's just like, this started from the beginning. This is all from the beginning, and you could take the text of the Bible, which is, you know, if you, you know, see it as coming from the hand of the divine, the mouth of the divine, and saying this was part of the esoteric wisdom that came down from Moses and Sinai, and it was passed from, you know, the oral tradition until it was finally put together during that medieval period. But you know, the people who are making the pilgrimages to the graves and studying it and believing in the holiness of the words don't see it as being this sort of, you know, academic type of thing where there's, but the language of the Zohar, the language from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, is it's not coming from a typical state of consciousness. It's you know, as we would say, it's like it's beyond. It's really not, you know, there, it's not coming from, you know, just having a cup of coffee here.
Okay, let's talk about that. I'm really interested in what you just said.
I'm not the right guy for this. I told you, I'm the hack. I'm a hack for you. We need to find you a Kabbalist who will come on the show.
What are you talking about?
I'm your rabbi. That's right. I'm your rabbi. By the way, on my website, which I have because of you, because you're like, how can people reach you? And I said they can't. And somebody's like, that's messed up. So he made me a website. My buddy Zev made me a website.
Awesome.
And part of my bio, if you don't mind, is in addition to my private practice, I lead mindfulness and psychedelic integration, seminars and sessions for trippy.vc. Repping here. I received my certificate in ketamine assisted psychotherapy from Reconscious Medical with my buddy and partner Dr. Mark Bronstein, and he also has the distinct privilege of being Duncan Trussell's rabbi.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my website bio. That's literally like, come work with me because
it's true.
I'm all in.
A tremendous thank you to ZipRecruiter for supporting this episode of the DTFH. If you're running a business, you know it is terrifying to try to hire people. As they say, the vampire only goes where they're invited. And if you're not careful, you can end up with a vampire, a pulsating Nosferatu, taking up space in your dream. You don't want that to happen. Also, it's hard to find qualified candidates. It takes a long time. And if you're already running a business, you probably don't have a lot of that. ZipRecruiter is where you need to go. They make hiring easy. They do the work for you by using their powerful technology to find and match in the right candidates with your job. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. This is why ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of January 1st, 2022. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my dear listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. That's ZipRecruiter.com, D-U-N-C-A-N. ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. So, the thing you're talking about, I'm curious from the Kabbalistic perspective or the Jewish perspective, if there's one of the cool things about Judaism is there's so many names for things that you've probably experienced, but you never thought, oh, that could go into a word. So when I'm reading, sometimes when I'm reading like some Tibetan Buddhist scripture or even like a good translation of the Gospels, regardless of my belief in the reality of what they're saying, the way that they're saying it, the way the words have been assembled, points to this elevated consciousness that you definitely don't get from drinking coffee. Like, it doesn't matter if you, or maybe you do, really good coffee, yeah, but
some good coffee.
When you're reading it, like for me, this has always been so like a good sign that I've kind of pushed through to a deeper part of the scripture is when I start recognizing the consciousness behind behind the words. And I'm wondering, is there a word for that, or is there an idea about how consciousness itself can get wrapped up in the writing, that somehow the writing acts as a medium or a vessel for the consciousness that wrote it, even if it's being translated? What is that?
I think so. Isn't there some sort of unconscious way of just doing that when you're just writing and you feel, I don't remember the exact word for it, but there's definitely a phenomenon where a person can get into that state through the writing. But I don't know if that was the meaning. These were recorded conversations. They were taking mystical journeys through the field and just seeing whatever came up, because ultimately what comes up in all of these things, and I think this is where the intentionality comes from, is there's different levels of understanding the scriptures. There's the basic verse, there's the homiletic version, and there's the, you know, the hints, there are allusions to it, and then there's this idea of sod, which is the secret. There's a secret code to everything. And you're reading the Bible and it's like, that's great. And then you read some commentary says everything that you're reading right now is the name of God. That's why the way that you read the book, the way that you write the book, there are rules for all of these things, because this is something that we believe is an ability to tap into an altered state of consciousness, of really accessing divinity. I mean, I could get up and get it for you, but like literally every single word in the Bible is code. It's a code for, and the people who lived in the Bible, they existed. And there's also a different level, what we're talking about, you know, what Jacob represents, what Rachel represents, what Leah, his wife, represents, and all these different stories that happen in the Bible. Yes, they happened. What happened in the garden? You know, we're talking about a cataclysmic event of utter, right. which shattered everyone's consciousness, and we're all suffering because of that. That's the trauma that we're all trying to heal from. And so, yes, was there some sort of something happened there? But it also happened on so many different levels, and it's still impacting us today. And so what we try to do is really live with the here and now of whatever the Torah, whatever the Bible is saying. And it can't be a story that happened thousands of years ago. Meaning even in last week's you know, weekly portion that the if you're going to temple, you're going to synagogue, you're reading the that week's Torah portion, it says, you know, and now what does God ask from you? And what does God ask from you? And it goes, continues, says, but, you know, and then my friend, my teacher of Judah, Michelle, the chief rabbi of the world, teaches, you know what God's asking from you is right now. Ve'ata is the Hebrew word for right now. So that means God is asking for you. What's God asking for you? He's just asking for you to be mindful, to be present. And this is part of where I see my very small part in the mission is, you know, you think of mindfulness. And who are your teachers? You know, they're beautiful people. They're amazing. And it's Sylvia and Sharon and yeah. Ram Dass and Tara Brock. And they're you know, Turn. And it's just like Nick Turn, Dave, I forgot. You know, I'm a little bit, actually, I didn't forget. I probably consciously forgot him because I'm like, he has his meditation
Cornfield.
Teacher.
Cornfield.
Well, again, you know, Joe's got, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Aaron Rodgers, and you get Cornfield and Benji Epstein. So, like, take that for your experience, you know?
I will take a Mark Zuckerberg too, please.
Well, we can meditate. Actually, I actually just finished Jack Kornfield's course with Tara Brock.
Wow.
And I got my teacher certificate. Yeah, except for the fact that now Whoa. I can't do my 100 hours with David. I was like, I can't keep spending money on degrees. I just need to meditate. We got to talk right. about our meditation practice. I got a teaching for you. But in terms of these code words, you know, it's all coming back.
The present moment. What does God want from you?
What does God want from you? And also, but these teachers, I'm sorry to interrupt, these teachers are you know, they're so focused on the Buddhist ideas. It's like, let's find it in Judaism. And I'm really starting to have people are just so open to you know, seeing it in their own tradition. It's like, whatever you're doing right now, with the right intention, with faith, with what we talked about last time with Dveikut, with that connectivity, knowing precisely and fully that at this very moment, God's infinite light is contracting itself to where we are right now. It's happening right now in this moment. And what we're now experiencing and allowing ourselves to feel is God's presence in us right now. And we become the temple. We become the temple, and we brought God into this moment. And if you're rushing through whatever you're doing, if you're trying to get through it, it means you're denying God's presence right there in the moment. And it's just about,
wow.
It's like, let's be here now, and let's make space for the divinity that's residing or creating or innervating that moment.
The one thing that you're bringing up, I think, is really important, and I'm just realizing it, is how you can accidentally become less of a spiritualist and more of an archaeologist. So yeah. that so, because you are looking at whatever the scripture is you may be reading, regardless of the tradition it comes from, and thinking, this is old, I'm reading something really old, accidentally, under the surface, you're also thinking, therefore, not alive, therefore, yeah. not happening now. These events that are being talked about, or this being who is writing them down, or the being they're referring to, is dead.
Yeah.
And that, if you're doing that, that's another way of cutting, crimping up the hose, so to speak.
Yeah,
because where the magic really happens is when somehow you break through and you get those glimpses of like, wait, how is this not? Wait, this is happening now. Like, nothing has changed. No, we are there experiencing it in a first person way. So that the moment I'm able to do that, I go from being a bystander to a participant. You know, and that
yes.
that You know what I mean? And then that's...
No, it's like you're either watching the game, and this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe made this. Oh, you know what? I had a dream. I had a dream where I sent you a biography of his. Remind me to send you a copy of that, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Oh, it's going to blow your mind. You talk about, like, you know, again, I think I saw that Neem Karoli Baba, they just came out with a book of his stories of the people and the dreams they've had. I'm going to send you one about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Oh, this is why I'm put on this planet. This is why I'm here. But, you know, if you're a spectator, it's just like, that's not going to do it. That's not, and there are people who don't even think about it. They're not thinking about it, and they go through their days. I don't know how, and God bless them, but, like, that's not the way I'm going to go through life. That's not the consciousness that I want to have. That's not the relationship that God wants from me. God wants it to be animated. And if you think about it, in the garden, did not we get here? In the garden, there were two trees. And there's a discussion about, well, it might be the same tree. But if you read the scripture carefully, there was one tree that was called the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And then there was the tree of life. And you know what else is called the tree of life? In the verse, it says, Eitz Chaim hi. Eitz Chaim is a tree of life. Lamachazikim ba, to those who hold on to it. That's also referred to the Torah. The Torah is analogized, English, as the tree of life. Because that's the Torah is how God chose to enclose himself. That's the story that he's telling, and he's always telling, and he's constantly telling that story. There's a story, and there's a book, and there's a writer, and they're all, you know, there. And then you have Thoreau, who's telling you that, you know, everything that's happened, past, present, future, right? It's sublime. It's true. He says, but all of these times and places, I don't have the exact quote, are here and now, now and here. And he says, God is culminating in the, can I look it up? Can I look up that quote?
Yeah, hold please.
Because this is what we're talking about. And hold on. Yeah, okay. In eternity, there is indeed something true and sublime. But all these times and places and occasions are now and here. God himself culminates in the present moment and will never be more divine in the lapse of the ages.
Wow. That's right?
We have to be living with God right now. If that's how we because if it was something that happened, if it was a story that happened a long time ago, and we talk about, and we're going to talk about the Baal Shem Tov, who is the person who really took these Kabbalistic ideas and really brought them to the masses. Can I tell you a story?
Yes.
This is a Baal Shem Tov story. And we're all living in a Baal Shem Tov story. We're all living in some mystical story, whether or not we're aware of it. We just want to know, if we're awake to it, then we realize we're all part of some. What are the chances of this? I'm sorry, the ADHD is strong right now. What are the chances of this happening? I just want to, again, take that moment to breathe. And just you know, today I dropped my kid off to first grade. How are your kids doing?
Great, thank you for asking. Yeah, they're both in school now.
Both in school now. What a blessing,
preschool.
Right? Preschool. Yeah. So when's your oldest going to first grade?
Or kindergarten. We do kindergarten. So yeah,
no,
kindergarten
after, and then you don't have first grade after first grade. Meaning.
Oh, I think that's going to be through, I think we're talking 2 years. Probably.
2 years, right. So you got 2 years to just prepare yourself mentally for this. Because I was hit with a ton of bricks that I'm sending my kid to a school where he will probably, because this is what schools do, remove all of his love of learning and curiosity and just, you know, fill his head with, you know, rote facts and things like that. But I'm hoping that that won't happen. But there was this feeling, and I was walking and somebody stopped by and he's like, you ever hear of this expression called Ichigo Ichi? And I was like, no. He's like, it's this Japanese concept that is translated as, you know, for this time only. And it's like, it's, you're supposed to just treasure the unrepeatable nature of a moment.
Wow.
And it's
like,
right, this, and they do it during the tea ceremonies. And it's just like, wait, 1 second. I saw the translation was one lifetime, one meeting. And it's just like every single moment. And this is a one lifetime, one meeting type of thing. So I just want, again, all glory, all
wait,
glory.
Wait, there's a, hold. Oh, I'm going to look at all glory. Say all glory. What?
All glory to the midnight gospel gods. The gospels. Is that the
gods?
When they're referring to the gospels? No, there's just one God. That's the thing. But again, when you say there's one God, here's our prayer for the day. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Right. That doesn't mean that there's one God as opposed to your many gods. It's all one. It's really connecting to the one, and that's where we're all trying to get to. And the name that reflects the one is this Yud Hey Vavin Hey, which, if you take it, has the Hebrew words for it, past, future, and present. The Yud Hey Vav Hey can be combined into Hoveh, Haya, which is past, and Yihyeh, which again is the same letters, which is will be, and then the Hoveh is, so all of it, and we are, our dualistic minds can't comprehend that, but
no,
right, but we, I choose, and I affirm, and I believe, and this is what I'm consciously working on through doing psychedelic assisted therapy, through doing meditation, through prayer, to really access that, and you know, otherwise, what else are we doing? What else?
Because we're coming back. Let's talk about.
Well, I want to tell my Baal Shem Tov story. Am I throwing too much
out there? Oh, yeah, wait. No, you're not. But I clarify Baal Shem. How do you say it again? Baal Shem Tov?
Baal Shem Tov.
Baal Shem Tov.
Baal Shem Tov was the founder of Hasidut. Hasidut, the Hasidim. You see Jews who are dressed a certain way. So they're the progenitor. They're the followers of that certain movement. But, I mean, we're all students of the Baal Shem Tov. I'm so terrible with the history, but you know, late 1700s, early, you know, mid 1700s, early 1800s.
Okay.
And the state of Judaism is completely dire in despair. There's been false messiahs. There's been the pogroms for many, many thousands of years, you know, since the exile of the temple. And we've got a lot of collective trauma. We've got a lot of that epigenetic trauma.
It's so bloody, incomprehensibly brutal. So Baal Shem Tov.
Baal Shem Tov just came, and he was one of these. There are many Baal Shem Tovs. I mean, literally means master of the good name. And And he came to just literally teach people that they can meet God where they are, and it doesn't belong to the oligarchy who can read and write and who can actually study the dialectics of Talmud. It's like you could be the simple tailor and the stories. And I'm going to send you another amazing book called I can't remember the name, by Elie Wiesel. It's called doesn't matter, who just tells these beautiful stories where he brings these Hasidic personalities alive, and you're watching miracle workers, but they're not interested in doing miracles. They're interested in showing the common folk how beloved they are, and how dear they are to God, and how beloved their service is.
Because what you're saying may not seem that spectacular in the sense that the hierarchized priest class,
right,
idea that used to be like legislated because of people like Baal Shem Tov has been,
it was
like
revolutionary. It was revolutionary at them. It was revolutionary, and he was put, and they were put into excommunication. There was again not a civil war in terms of violence. There was a here and there, but like they were communities. They would not marry into each other, and that they were saying that they were heretics, and they were saying, but the test of time has shown that this is what's kept, you know, a lot of people in the faith. And there are people who don't connect to it, and that's fine. But if you don't know a certain a wordless song, which is called the Nigun, N-I-G-G-U-N, a Nigun, which is just something soulful and haunting, and there's some beautiful music. I have buddies named Zusha, anyone listening, to just have their minds completely blown about how you can connect to God through wordless song. And just how the simple person isn't so simple, and to just be simple. You know who's the most simple? God. He's the most simple.
Right.
He's not complicated. Because again, when you're complicated, then you've got layers and you've got pieces and you've got to sort of meld things together. It's just like God is just unity.
And when you're complicated, the more complicated a system is, the more likely it is to break. So you know, you get a thing with lots of parts, it's probably something will malfunction. So if you're going to, if you want to associate breakability with complexity, and if we're talking about an unbreakable thing, then it would be the most simple thing.
Well, that's beautiful. Elemental. I love that explanation. That's such a beautiful way to explain, you know, the ultimate simplicity, which is something we strive for, because again, in this day and age, we're cultivating personas in online and how we are with certain people. And it's just like, you want to get back that beginner's mind, that innocence of the child where he's just like, yeah, he's going to speak his mind. You're like, oh, right. How do you like it? He's like, it tastes terrible. It's like, thank you. Thank you. It's like, it's really good. I'm like, no, this is gross. Give me something else. Like, thank you for that. It's so refreshing and so honest. And so, and again, you can't hurt people's feelings, but if you're saying it from a beautiful place, and that's coming because they love themselves. This is what I'm working on in therapy.
You know what the oldest said to me once? Daddy, your lip stinks. When I had bad breath, I didn't know you.
And how good, if your wife had said that to you, how personally would you? It would be World War III.
She has said it to me. And she's like, I'm getting you.
Yeah, she's like, I've got these halitosis things that don't work, but I'm just like, hey, you know what? Your breath stinks. But your kid says, and you're just like, and like saying, I love you so much. And he's like, Daddy, I just want to go to sleep right now. Abba, can you stop talking? And I'm like, yes, of course. Yes, of course. No, but all we want for our kids, and this is what I'm thinking about with first grade, all we want for our kids is for them to unconditionally, radically love themselves. And I'm thinking about this as it goes to first grade. I'm like, please, just don't lose that. Because everyone who I'm seeing in therapy, and this is where, you know, this is where we're speaking the language of just love yourself, you know, and it's like it's getting either harder or people are just struggling with it. And my wife, God bless her, is one of the one percenters. And meaning she's one of those people who just like, yeah, I love myself. Like, well, I don't get it. What are people coming to therapy for? If, you know, of course you love yourself. And I'm like, and it's not narcissism. It's not. She's just, you mess up. Like, oops, I made a mistake. I'm really sorry. Move on. Like,
I think an important distinction between narcissistic traits and actual loving of oneself is that the narcissist clings to itself. The narcissist is trying to cling to some identity and amplify that identity to the world because they think they are that, and to deconstruct that or for that to not be anymore, I think for a narcissist is death. Whereas there isn't a loving oneself is not clingy. You're not, it doesn't mean pushing yourself out into the world as much as surrender. I think it's more of a surrender quality than a clinging quality.
You're not attached to it. But I'm saying, Neem Karol Bala, if you said, did he love himself? Did he love himself? He loved himself. Like, there was unconditional radical. And when you mess up, when the Dalai Lama messes up, one of my rabbis messes up, the laughter that comes from it, the just the absolute joy of when they sort of do a faux pas of just like this laugh, and they laugh it off because, hey, what are we taking so seriously here? And just to have that, it's like, well, you messed up, and like your whole self-worth is tied up into whether or not you get this deal or whether or not this person respects you. And it's just like, it's not
a big deal. It's not a big deal. You just do, that's part of the thing is the failure. And the failure is, you know, again, to go back, and I think having kids is a great way to connect to this. When your child makes a mistake or something, you know, it's like, hopefully you're not holding whatever that thing is against the child at all. You're just like, you're new. This is, you're brand new. You don't know. You're learning. What's the big, you're going to learn. You're going to keep trying. But like, and I think the other thing you said earlier is important. I want to put it in italics, the connection between simplicity and God, or simplicity and awakening, or however you want to put
awakening.
Is that when something that's simple tells you something, when something that loves itself or is so in the universe and so in the moment that the concept of not loving themselves hasn't even appeared yet, they can say anything, and it doesn't have that jagged edge that people who have disconnected and are like really condensed in an identity has. As someone who is good at like pulling the shank out and stabbing someone, you know what I mean? That is not coming from a simple place. It's coming from complexity and all the insecurity. The other thing that it must go along with complexity is insecurity. If your defense mechanisms are complex, you're going to be naturally nervous because there's so many areas that could collapse or be invaded. There's too many systems in place. You're going to feel insecure. And insecure people tend to be mean.
And defensive. You know, defensive and triggered. Yeah. And they get off on it. They're getting off on this. I've seen people who just like need to be righteous and indignation, the righteous indignation morally. And it's like, you don't want to look at yourself. You'd rather just rage. You'd rather just, you know, brouhaha or something. It's just like, take a deep breath and say, what's really upsetting you right now? And there are people who get upset. There's a way. You're not going to be passive. Yeah. And you get let people roll over you. But you're also not getting caught up in things that don't really matter. Like, how are you getting involved in this? And it's just like, are your insecurities such that you want to just focus on anywhere external rather than actually look at your inner life and look at what's going on and what's really true right now?
Thank you, Herbstomp, for supporting the DTFH. Herbstomp, it's the only place to grab top-quality kratom, kava, blue lotus, along with hundreds of ethnobotanicals and herbal remedies. Herbstomp has been sourcing only the purest ethnobotanicals for over 10 years. Herbstomp remains a top choice for strange and hard-to-find herbs. Customers love their lightning-speed, nationwide shipping, friendly attitude, and rigorously sourced products. Every batch of premium kratom is tested with precise detail to ensure the highest quality with every purchase. Capsules and extracts available. Stop by one of their Portland, Oregon retail stores or shop online at herbstomp.com. That's herbstomp.com. Don't forget, you can now get 25% off your next order of kratom when you use the coupon code DUNK25. That's no spaces, DUNK25, DUNC25, when you check out at herbstomp.com. Free shipping for orders over $100. Herbstomp, America's most trusted kratom. Thank you, Herbstomp.
What's really true right now? What's bothering
you? You know, the ultimate example of this is the hoarder. Like, a hoarder.
Guilty.
That you're not. We're talking like the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't want to look. They don't want to admit when you're trying to point out to them, hey, you know what? You don't need a room full of cat litter boxes. You don't need this much cat litter. You don't need no one needs this. This is enough cat litter for 100 years for 100 cats. You can get rid of like half the cat litter. They will be like, no, you don't get it. I got this cat litter at a discount. I'm not getting rid of this cat litter. It was a great deal.
You're the loser.
I could resell it. You don't understand what that rotting banana peel in the box of old fruit means to me. That I had that banana peel on my birthday a few years ago. It's a complex hoarding is not simple.
Not
it's
at all.
Complex. And many of us are inner hoarders. At least the hoarder, you can't say, no, that's not there. The hoarder has to admit there is a room full of newspapers mixed in with cars, mixed in with toy train tracks and a few piles of wipes. They have to admit it's there. A person can pretend it's not there. You can lie to yourself. There's no room like that inside of me. But my point is this. If you are in a hoarder's house, if you're a hoarder, their house is fucking, they catch on fire all the time. You know what I mean? It's bad news. That's the problem.
There's no space. The kindling is, you know.
You don't want to live near a hoarder because your likelihood of getting your house on fire. Similarly, an inner hoarder, that they catch on fire all the time. They have these blazes that they are always constantly trying to put out. You know what I mean? So simplicity, is you doing the thing to yourself that they do on that show Hoarders, which is unloading all the shit if you can. It's harder though for inside than a house. Well, so at least
the hard part about it is you're gonna really have to confront all that kitty litter. And you're going to have to confront the fact that you behaved in ways or you did things that were completely antithetical to what you valued, to what you really wanted. And it's a scary, right. It's a scary thing. I was talking to a client recently and just saying that, like, you know, he couldn't understand why a person behaved this way. And this person sounded like they had a personality disorder. Like they were really struggling. They were suffering. And he couldn't even comprehend, you know, how could she have turned that on me? How could she have turned that back on me after she did something wrong? Because I said, that person, if they ever feel the slightest tinge of uncomfortability or judgment or blame, they believe that they will implode. They will literally, and they were going to set up this boundary for if you go anywhere near there. And they know they're doing it also. They know that they're doing something to push people away when all they want is to just connect and really have a deep, meaningful, emotional connection. And it's fascinating and it's tragic. But the alternative is, and this is the time of the year, you know, as we go into Rosh Hashanah, which again, I was thinking about how we connected. And after the band, and we sort of didn't drift, but we didn't really maintain the connection, I saw this unbelievable quote that said, maybe you're not healing because you're trying to be who you were before the trauma. That person doesn't exist anymore because there's a new you trying to be born. Breathe life into that. And I enclosed a GIF of Clancy, and I don't know if you remember, you better remember, Clancy, to get out of whatever universe he was in. You know what he was blowing?
Yeah, I do.
What was he blowing?
He was blowing the hunting horn that was hanging over my father's bed when he died.
You just destroyed the myth for every single Jewish person in the world. Because you know what we thought that he was blowing? Hold on.
I know exactly what you're bringing out.
You know what I'm bringing out?
A kazoo. I'm just kidding. Yeah, well, it's just a horn from a different animal.
It's just a horn from a different animal. But this is blown on Rosh Hashanah. This is the horn that's blown on the Jewish New Year. And we talked about this offline, where we talked about how it's this belief of the new year is that this isn't a continuation. This is a brand new, and the services that we do on the high holy day of Rosh Hashanah, which means new year, Rosh is the head, means where the Keser is. And again, what we're doing on Rosh Hashanah, according to the Kabbalists, is awakening the desire, which is synonymous with the word keser, ratzon, for God to once again reincarnate the world in this form. We're instilling that desire, and we do that through blowing this ram's horn. And the ram's horn is this worldless prayer, and it's the manifestation of what? Of breath through our breath.
Listen. Don't I just so everyone knows, I was aware of that as well. I just didn't have one of those, but I did have a hunting horn, and I understood the mystical symbolism, not just of what that horn meant to me, but
dad.
Also and to my dad, and also what it meant to all the traditions that have an aspect of that, like the Hare Krishnas blow a conch shell,
right?
And that's the most intense thing when they're blowing it during a puja ceremony, and that you are combining life with death. Blowing into a bone is blowing life into a dead thing, which represents, I think, what you're talking about with Rosh. How do you say it?
Rosh Hashanah.
You're describing even the word itself, Rosh Hashanah. Sounds, it's like an outflow, you know. It sounds like you are blowing it out, like blowing up the balloon again,
putting the air back in, restarting.
Yeah, and that we get to do that because we have, that's the other thing I love about the Book of Genesis story is the breath. Is, you know, it's the divine breath is p- placed into animated. Adam, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's what we're doing. Because we don't, the Rosh Hashanah is actually not the day that God created the world according to tradition. It's the day that he created man. Man was created on the sixth day, according to the, and you see these rabbis in the Talmud arguing about when God created the world, and they have disagreements, and there's so many metaphysical layers about this, and they end up saying that they're both right. One was in divine wisdom, one was in divine actualization, and it's just like, but the Rosh Hashanah is not commemorating the day that God created the world. We say he created the world, but what it actually means is he created man on that day. And that was
so let's talk about that. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Not cutting me off. I said we have a lot to talk about. We got to tell a Baal Shem Tov story. It's just.
I want to get to that Baal Shem Tov story, but I want to talk about this.
With the shofar, when Clancy blows it, it's like, again, we become that new person. And the way that we talked about that brokenness, how a person needs to confront that brokenness in order to get whole. And it's not to ignore that brokenness. And that's sort of like. You know, a lot of what I'm thinking about right now is you know, Rabbi Nachman and the Arizal who we talked about. You know, they talk about the intention for this month as we build up. You know, that liminal space of the end of the year going to the beginning of the year, and he says Rabbi Nachman says that a person has to be an expert in running and returning, or the Zohar would say going up and going down. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the practice of toggling, right? And it's just like, again, not meaning I'm taking it in and I'm doing it out, and saying a person has to, Rabbi Nachman says a person has to be an expert when he's doing that, because that is how a person comes back to who they really are. That's how a person does teshuva, which again, teshuva means return, which again is classically translated as repentance, but it's again, it's the mindfulness mitzvah of just returning to what? Returning to essence.
Wow.
But no, this is for you, Rabbi Duncan. This is for you. The word teshuva is made up of the letters Taf, Shin, Vav, Vet, Hey. Which is, again, at the end. If you remember the word Hey, the letter Hey, Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. Tashuv means to return. What are you returning? You're tashuving. You're returning the Hey. You're putting that Hey back into the name of God. You are unifying God's name by you returning to yourself. If you want to connect to God, you got to connect to your soul. I have to blow your mind once a cast.
Wow! My mind is the dead horn, and you just blew it. The
wow. Should we that prepare for that? So I just cool. I felt inspired. But if you listen to those psalms here, just a little bit more. This is called the Tekiah.
Yeah.
Tekiah. It's one simple blast. Straight, simple, no movement, oscillation. The next sounds are either, there's again an argument about how it's supposed to sound. But it's supposed to be some sort of either a three short notes, the sort of blast called a shvarim, which means brokenness. And then there's the just outright bawling, just the brokenness of the trua, which is also means connectivity and friendship, but it's. And then it ends once again with the tekiah, the simple, uncomplicated sound. And that's what Clancy's doing, and that's what we're all doing. You start off life with that simple, straight sound. You're good. Your essence is good. And then, guess what? You break up. You break down. You break apart.
You're out of the garden.
You're out of the garden. Things go to pieces. You know, stuff happens. And, you know, sometimes it's just like a little bit of a, you know, a sob, a wail, like, oh, oi, oi, oi. And then it's just, there's just this unfettered, uncontrolled, just you just broke down. And you say, I can't get back, right? But you don't have to get back to that old person. You don't have to hoard that person. You get back to that simple sound. You get back to that tekiah. and your essence, mm. and that's what we're trying to return to. And that's why you can hear the sound of a dead animal, and you could be bawling. Imagine a Martian coming down and saying, like, okay, what's going on here? Like, you're blowing a ram's horn. That's how you're coronating the king. He said, there's no greater coronation of the king. There's no greater way that we can be. And that's all we're doing on Rosh Hashanah. We're just crowning you king. We want you to be king, and we want to be servants, and you can't do it without us. That's the crazy piece that you talk about being empowered. Is there, even in the Hebrew language, there's dictatorship, which is memshala, and then there's melucha, which is, again, you'll hear the word malchut. We're building up the kingship. We're building it up, and the Kabbalists are doing it through the names, and they're into, and it's happening anyway. It's just whether or not you're aware of it. Meaning, what am I doing by it? It's like, well, I'm tapping into it, and I'm accessing more of this awareness and knowledge. But that inculcating that brokenness and not divorcing it and bringing it in. Oh, it's so deep. It's so deep.
And I love how everything is a map in Judaism. Everything is like a hole on, and it and is representing the
cycle. And we're getting to the holographic principle. The part contains the whole. You cannot look at that piece and not see the all in it. If you're missing the all in it, then you've, like you said, you've cut it off.
Okay, so if the breath that is resonating the horn mm-hmm. represents the divine, mm-hmm. then you separate those two things, and you just have the horn. It's dead, lifeless, and you have some breath that has no mode of expression, right? It's just, it's not forming into time space. So the two things, when they combine, regardless of the horn itself, the lifelessness, this is, I think, when they talk about karma, maybe you mm-hmm. could say that's the material. That's just the stuff, but the breath of God part, you hear in Buddhism, fundamental goodness. It's always there. If you're hearing anything, in other words, right? If you're experiencing humanity, if you're all around, the thing that's resonating you, whether you can understand it or not, is perfect, simple, no matter what. And the way that it's being expressed through you can seem like chaotic and like all kinds of weird ways of expressing that thing, but it's still the what's making it come into life is this eternal simplicity, right? And then, that's the idea.
And then you have equanimity. And this is the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov of Shiviti Adonai, Yud Hei Vav and Hei, again, Linegdi Tamid. And Shiviti means I place God in front of me. So you'll see that people have mandalas, people have the hold on one second, can you see this? You see that there? I mean, that's something that you'll see in synagogues. You'll see this is the letter.
What is it? What
this is
that?
The letter Yud. Oh, this is the letter Hey. This is the letter Vav, and this is the letter Hey. This is exactly.
Wait, let me describe what I'm looking at. Everyone, I'm seeing it.
Wait a second. I want to. Good luck with this one. Here we go.
it's definitely a mandala. It's mandala, rectangular. Yeah.
Well, this one happens
it's,
to be.
You have circular ones too?
Yeah.
One, two, three. I can't see the entire.
The shape doesn't matter as much. I'll send you a picture.
Each side is three. It looks like, what is that? One, two, three. I can't tell if it's two, one, two.
You could spend,
two rectangles.
You could spend hours.
There's a menorah.
There's a menorah that has a chapter of Psalms on it. And so, again, that's what you're supposed to be visualizing as you say it. You can see different permutations of the Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. But anyway, I'll give you a more simple one. Again, why this is on my desk, because, we like to have fun here. Here's another one for you. This will be a little bit more simple. It says the word Shaviti means that place, and then it's the Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. And then it says it has the Yud and then the Aleph. And the Aleph is the name of Malchut. So this is the Tetragrammaton, is the Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey, but the name of Malchut is mixed in it, and so you're trying to see is how God is enlivening, is breathing life into the Malchut, which is, and that's, so you combine them together, but with the Baal Shem Tov, so usually I place God in front of me, and you see it as like, a visualization, a meditation. What he says is Shiviti also means it's equal, right? Praise, blame, it's all equal to me. Why is it equal to me? Because Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey is in front of me always. If I see whatever I'm seeing right now is Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, the traffic jam, The most mystical experience of the world, you know, after the ecstasy, the laundry, meaning there's no difference. There's no difference. And we struggle with that. I struggle with that because I like Ram Dass, you know, it's like, it's just a drug experience. I'm like, yeah, but it was, I felt like I was clicking at a higher level there, that during that meditation, I was clicking. When I'm driving the car, when I'm tying my shoes, and Judaism really tries to, because people feel it's very regimented. There's so many laws, so many rules. It's like, it's just to create awareness. We've sort of lost the forest and the trees. But if you take a step back and realize that everything is supposed to connect us. And what can you give God? God's got a lot of palaces and spheres and angels and doorways and castles. You know what he doesn't have? This.
What?
He doesn't have this planet. He's you know, what if God was one of us, you know, wandering around and you're seeing, you know, maybe it's everyone you look at is God in drag. But we don't want to believe that. But what the Baal Shem Tov was teaching, what the Baal Shem Tov really, you know, reviewed, is just like, if you're not seeing God in everything you're doing, you know, and all God wants is Nistava, you know, to have a dira b'tachtonim. We think he wants to be up there. He's fine up there. Imagine taking that dead, you know, that ram's horn. Imagine taking that person on the street. Imagine taking that food that you put in your mouth and raising it up and elevating it to something that is divine service. Only
and,
you can
and
do that.
That it's incredible, but you don't really need to raise it up, right? It's already raised up in our consciousness
for ourselves to be doing it. But that's what we can give him. That's the pleasure that you can give to God.
That's okay, right? You need something to do.
Here's the thing to do.
Right. And this going away and coming back that you're talking about, that cycle is like long form of that, right? You're talking about each year we're going to go away and come back. But in every single moment, to get back to the breath, you're looking at a going away, the exhalation, and a coming back, an inhalation, as though the message was like, you know, that movie Memento, where he's got shit painted all over the wall. It's painted in the main thing keeping you alive is this very cycle, which goes back to the possibility that name is the sound of your breath.
The sound of your breath. That's what's giving it to you.
Your breath is the scripture. It's the map.
The word for soul in Judaism, neshama, also means breath, neshima.
Wow.
Neshima, neshama.
No,
yeah, I was saying that. I think that's the breath connection. And again, we're doing it and we're seeing it. And it's running and returning. You know, running, you know, sometimes you feel so close to the divine. And sometimes you're returning. Sometimes you feel so far removed and you feel so bereft of God's. And it's like you're right there in that moment. If you're tapping in, you can never leave God's presence. And so we make this arbitrary, does it matter what I do? Of course it matters what you do, because you don't want to create that, you know, quote unquote, demon. Or you want to build that angel. They talk about that karma we're talking about, of just, you know, that hashkacha pratit, of just like our actions have reverberations. Matters. What you say matters. You know, because if you know that your words actually matter, you would never speak poorly about somebody. Of course we wouldn't kill somebody. But we're not killing people because it's illegal. We're not killing people because we believe in, like you said, that fundamental goodness. And so we have to work, and especially during this time of year when we're going to be crowning God as king, this is the time of tshuva. This is the season of returning that hay. And returning that hate to God's name, which we can only do through empathy and compassion and love of ourselves and others. You know, the month that we're in right now is called Elul, and the Ari teaches us is an acronym. Is Aleph Elul is Ani, I. Lamed is Lidodi. I'm not doing a great job explaining this because it's Hebrew, and I apologize to those who I'm not doing this well.
I love it.
Vidodi li, I'm to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. It's like I would never left. I never left, and you never left. And it's just like we've been here all along, and we've been sort of playing this hide and seek game. And it's just like we don't have to play this game, but we have to stop. Like you said, we have to stop
drift.
We didn't drift. I never went anywhere. You couldn't. There's nowhere you could possibly go. It's like you don't love me, Mom. And it's just like there's no way I could stop loving you, right? There's no way I could stop loving you. And we're in this dance. this Shivisi Adonai Lenegdi Sami, this placing God in front of me, and this equanimity, and this going and giving, and this receiving, and returning, and going up and going down. It's just like, it's just this dance where if we recognize that it's all part of one united whole. You know, again, if you only heard that, then you would, you know, then you're a righteous individual, but you're not somebody who's you know, who's gone through the process. And again, I think there are bodhisattvas and there are tzaddikim who come in, and they're here to just get us right on the path. But we don't have to look at them and be like, oh, well, I should be like that, or I need to be. That's like, no. The Talmud says, in the place where those who are ba'alei tshuva, masters of this returning, masters of returning the hay, where they stand, the righteous, the gurus, the tzaddikim, they have no place there. They can't be there.
Wow.
Because they can't. They're just like, that's not their job. And it's not your job to be the bodhisattva. Now, again, it could be to tap into that, but not, you know, in your own way, to believe in your unique way and your unique greatness and your unique individuality and how God can't do it without you. And we struggle with it because we don't feel special. We say,
okay,
that
let's decomplexify.
By the way, this was supposed to happen for everybody. Everyone should know that this was supposed to happen in Burning Man, but I pulled out. So I apologize about that. But what, next year.
And I pulled out. Well, I didn't pull out, which is why I couldn't go to Burning Man. I got kids.
And I'll explain it to you later, kids. Thank God you did it. More Duncan.
Thank God. Thank you. But that brings me to what I was, in an attempt to, even though I don't think it needs to be decomplexified because you so beautifully described it, I'm just thinking, in the beginning you were talking about the experience of dropping your kid off at kindergarten. And, you know, you're going to pick them up after school.
Oh, sure.
But it's, so that cycle is still going to happen. In one of these books I was reading about raising kids, it talks about how toddlers, the cycle of a toddler is they'll hang out with the parent for a second, then they'll go out to explore, and then they come back and they'll hug you for a second. And then they go out again, and then they come back.
Attachment theory 101.
That's it. And that is the respiratory cycle of parenting, that going out and coming back, right? It's the same thing. And just because you made the kids doesn't mean like you don't need them. I mean, every time they come back and hug you and like, and when they get older and start like hugging you and then saying, I love you. Those are the greatest moments. Those are the moments of ecstasy. Those are the highest moments. So if as above, so below, then this returning the crown or the running back to God, this must be the adding of the hay, right? It's like God, I don't know how God feels or what that is. I know how I feel.
Right.
And if as above, so below, it must be this, okay, I didn't lose you. You're here. You came back. Okay. And I love you. It's no big deal.
I was always here. And I was always
I was in the room.
You didn't lose me. You didn't lose me. You know, just I lost. Again, you lose yourself for a minute and then you find yourself. It's like someone's like, oh, I lost myself. I was like, that's okay. You're here now. And that's okay. That's it. You're here now. And this is something that I know from listening to you and davening and praying with you and just like we love our kids to death. And we also know that loving our kids to death means that's going to bring suffering. It just if you want to understand love, if you want to understand suffering, you know, they have to go together. This is the only one way because the ultimate suffering is to lose the thing that you love most. Everything else you could be fine with. I'm fine with everything. But like, you know, you were talking, I think, with Jack about, you know, if God forbid somebody did something to your kid and we don't even want to, we're not even going to allow our brains to go there. You know, like I could talk about love and kindness, but like I will rip you limb to limb. Yeah. And even, and it's just like we have this, it's deeper than you know, animalistic. It's so much more primal. And yet we also know intuitively as people on the path and people who are struggling on the path and losing the path, but never leaving the path and recognizing that, you know, it's straight. It's going to get straight at the end, you know, by some incarnation, it's going to be straight in the beginning and straight at the end. You know, It's going to hurt like hell.
Yeah.
It's and you talked about it so poignantly, and I think for so many people it opened up a real language, you know, when you talked about your mom. And you were talking about how, you know, even bringing it up in the book, it brought up something for you as you're writing the book. And we're going to write a beautiful book on parenting. Just kidding.
Is that name of the book?
No, the book is the book is Don't Pull Out.
Don't pull out. Just kidding.
Just kidding. No, but it's the fact that you still felt it is because you'll never stop feeling it, and you never want to stop feeling it because
right.
That's how people they're still here. We connect. We believe that we can connect to people even more possibly when they're not in this physical plane, and there's just this sadness, which is, you know, we don't allow our minds to go there, but when we do that, you know, and then we can really connect to the suffering of the world. And that's the parting of this ability to do that. Again, the only people who can teach, you know, are the ones who understand suffering. And you're somebody who is a real, you're a person. You tell me if you can hear this. Do you feel this about yourself, that people gravitate towards you as a person, that they love being in your presence?
You know what? Gonna go there, because to me, I would love that. That sounds wonderful. But my feeling with it is, if that is happening, that's great, and that makes me happy. But I don't want to think about it, because the blowing of my horn.
Yeah.
I don't want to toot my own horn. I don't want to blow the thing.
No, because we don't love ourselves enough. It's we don't love ourselves enough
Right. I'm too complex. There's too many things going on for me to accept anything like that. And I'm okay with that right now. But the conversations like this, you know, I guess the reason you're seeing some like stammering here is because, to me, if we're going to use the analogy of blowing a horn,
yes, please.
There's a big difference between tooting your own horn
and having somebody toot it for you.
There you go.
That's a tank of gas. That's a tank of gas. That'll fill you up for a tank of gas till you need the next one. Till the next person will be like, okay, I need you to blow, and you need either a bigger horn, or more blowing. But at the end of the day, if you're not able to do it, if you're not able to do it yourself, if you're not able to give it to yourself, which is really, this is the month of compassion, where we're really, and even in the astrological, I believe the astrological sign for this month right now is the Virgin, because we're getting back to our pristine essence, and that takes a boatload of compassion. Compassion for the people who've wronged us, compassion for the things that we've done wrong, and compassion for God. You know, he also needs this. Again, not using the gender specific, just to make it clear. Again, there is no pronoun for God, but you know, this loving and compassionate being also is suffering, and that's the suffering of the Shechina, and that's the suffering of Malchut, because it's just, you know, when we're not living with awareness, when we're living with ignorance, it also pains him. It creates pain, divine pain. And so, you know, the sort of like, you know, field of dreams, I imagine, like, heal his pain. It's like, heal your pain, and you're going to be healing his divine pain. And again, you can only help the suffering of others if you've really learned how to suffer yourself, if you've really learned how to accept your own suffering, because then you start to see the ubiquity, not the ubiquity, the what's the opposite of ubiquity? The universality of suffering. It's like, oh, my suffering is not different than yours. I understand suffering, and and I could have compassion for you like I have compassion for myself. And pain is inevitable, right? Suffering is optional.
Yeah.
So yeah, blow your horn. Blow your horn.
This is the month of the Virgin, the month of blowing your own horn.
Right.
Well, why don't we close? Thank you so much. Why don't we close on you resonating, blowing the horn again for us. Well, I think it's a beautiful...
Can I tell that story? Can I tell that story? Do we have time for a story?
Oh, yeah, tell the story, and then let's blow the horn.
It's something my friend Joey or my friend Matt, I forget which one, just shared this story about, and it's a Baal Shem Tov story, but it's about where a living tzaddik right now, one of the rebbes, one of the gurus, he told the story of his grandfather, who was also a righteous individual, who dreamed that he saw the Baal Shem Tov, right? The master of the good name, revolutionary, changed the world. Remind me, I got to send you a copy of that book of the Rebbe, just to see how a tzaddik lives. It's just, they're not like us, but they're like us. And they see the good in us in like, So in this dream, right? So this grandfather, he's telling the story, he sees the Baal Shem Tov. And they're both standing on this majestic mountain. And you want to picture this scene of these two, you know, beautiful, saintly individuals, radiant, basking, glowing. And they're looking over this huge abyss. And the Baal Shem Tov says to him, "You want to see what it means to really serve God?" You're imagining this, right? Your eyes closed. You know what? Like, you can just see this huge precipice. They're standing over this huge precipice, and it's just this valley. And it's like, he says, "You want to know how to serve God, what it really means? Can I teach you how a person is really supposed to serve God?" And even before the person who was dreaming could answer the Baal Shem Tov, the holy Baal Shem Tov just free dives right off the cliff. He just jumps right off. And this other person, this tzaddik who's having the dream, is just watching in abject horror as like his guru just throws himself off the side of this cliff. And he's just watching him, and he sees he hits the ground and he shatters into a million pieces. He shatters into a myriad of pieces, like a vase. Just picture this, right? Just go with poetic license. The Baal Shem Tov has just shattered into a million pieces, and the guy doesn't know what to do. And he runs down, and he gets to the bottom, and he's like, "Oh, okay, like, you know, maybe this." And when he gets there, every piece he finds, he starts to pick up the broken shards, and every single piece he finds is an exact replica of the holy Baal Shem Tov. Right in that in that sliver contains the whole, and it's just like
that is awesome.
We think we're so broken. We realize that brokenness is all going to be part of that unified oneness. And we want it to be less complicated. But when we see that in that darkness, in that difficulty, in that suffering, in that struggle, there is also, and there's nothing more whole than the broken heart, says the rabbi of Kutsk. Menachem, there's nothing more whole. And there's the students asked him, they said, "Why does it say in the Shema prayer, why does it say to put the words on your heart? Why does it say in your heart?" He says, "Because your heart's stone." He says, "You pray with grace and with divine love and with a little bit of luck, you know, that stone is going to melt. So when it does, when it turns into that heart of flesh, right, those words that you've been placing on your heart, they'll just fall right in. They'll just be right in, you know." And that's all we're trying to do is take that brokenness, and again, there's nothing more whole than that broken heart. I just saw this amazing poem that said, it's called Last Fragment or Late Fragment. Again, I was thinking about the fragmented pieces. "And did you get what you wanted out of life, even so?" And that "even so" is just like, you think about your "even so." "And did you get what you wanted out of life, even so?" "I did." "And what was it you wanted?" "To call myself beloved, to feel myself beloved on this earth." You know, even with that "even so," even with those fragments, those pieces, that regret, that should have, could have, would have, this another year coming into this this being, and it's like, I don't want it to be the same. It's like, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. Stop trying to blow life into that person. You're not that person from before the trauma or from before you started hoarding those kitty litters. Breathe life into that new person. You're not who you think you are, right? Ram Dass 101, you're not who you think you are, right? Anyway, I love you. I really, truly love you.
I love that you. That was so beautiful.
Much. You're a beautiful. Thank you're a Ben. Bodhisattva. You are a being of light and compassion. You have real radiance. You have glow. I wear t-shirts with you on it. because
well, wait till our next podcast.
I'm gonna have to... Amen. No, can we do it in person? We would have so if we could do a live podcast. I'm telling you, we'd have like three people, including my mom. She would love this. You know,
I've always wanted to come to Israel. It's something I've always wanted to do.
Duncan, again, Ein Davar HaOmed B'fnei HaRatzon. You know what? Ratzon is that highest sphere because Ratzon comes even before. It's that before there's even a plan, there's something that's there, that kernel of ineffability. Where did that come from? I don't know. It's Ratzon. It's my will. You come, who knows? You come to Israel. Messiah, I'm not saying he won't come. I'm not saying animals won't attack you, but I'm not saying that Messiah will
You know
come.
What? I don't think the Messiah will be the thing that induces the birth of the Messiah if I come to Israel, but I do think we would have a pretty awesome podcast there.
We would
have lots of fun.
Thousands of people. What I live podcast in Israel. Tell me what you need me to do to make it. I'm calling Nicole right after this. She's getting a copy of this.
Yeah.
And
let's figure it out. I think that would be real to do a live DTFH in Israel. That would be a dream come true.
Say the word. Your wish is my command, as you wish. We're going to blow the shofar. I'm going to plug my t-shirt company that doesn't exist, and we're going to have wish each other we're going to wish each other k'tiva v'chatima tova. All right. So again, it's just this the intention for also the ram's horn is, and again, this is going to be in the parenting book. Don't wake your kids up with a ram's horn. It's a terrible move. Terrible. My daughter might never speak to me again. Love you, Hadassah. But I'm sorry. We're taking a deep breath. This the Maimonides, who is a rationalist, did not study or may not have access to the Kabbalah, but he's certainly somebody who keeps things rational, says, you know why we blow a horn? It's because the Torah says to, the Bible says to. He's like, but if I would have to give an allusion to it, it's because it's a reminder that it's time to wake up. All of our service, all of our practice has to be a practice of waking up. All we're trying to do is wake up out of our ignorance and just connect to the divinity within and around. And so my blessing to us as soul brothers is, is let's wake up. Wake up from not from coffee, but from something a lot stronger and a lot more simple. Oh, yeah. So
best
much love.
Podcast ever.
One love. No, so much so. Love. There was no AI. We didn't talk about AI. We didn't talk about aliens. We didn't talk about Gnostic Christians. We didn't. We have so much. So much to cover.
So much.
Psychedelics. But this is the Ichi of just like, you know, I'm just appreciating the fact that this is happening, that we live in a time where we have the technology to just, you know, see each other. How are we connected? And we're connected on a level that's just like, I was on another podcast on the Be Here Now Network with Madison Margolin. She's wonderful. And it's just like, I'm connected to Ram Dass. And I'm connected to Duncan Trussell. And we're all, like, there's one degree of separation to all of us. We're all connected. Let's share. Right. Let's love. Let's be connected. Let's really see the good in one another. And, you know, really feel proud of where we come from, our heritage, and see how the perennial wisdoms all complement one another. You do you. I do me. And we all come together and just say, shalom. You know, om.
Shalom.
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 Shalom. Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu. Adonai Echad.
.com. That's your t-shirt company.
Thegirlwhosold.co. It doesn't exist yet, but I have a landing page, which is, again, the guy who made my website, because he's like, you have to have a website. I was like, that's great. Let's make t-shirts. Next thing I know, thegirlwhosold.co. Top secret project. You heard about it first. Sign up your emails. Do you want to be part? If I ever make a t-shirt, will you wear it for like a second?
Are you kidding? Of course. Uh-oh. And the hat. I want the hat. Tell people where they can find you. This is my rabbi, everybody. You can see why.
I will not be your rabbi. I am only Duncan Trussell's rabbi. It says it on my website.
Come on!
DrBenji.com. I'm doing a lot. I'm going to start doing some mindfulness courses online. And I'm selling t-shirts at thegirlwhosold.co. And doing some good work in psychedelic-assisted therapy. I'm doing some bougie group ketamine sessions with my colleague, Dr. Mark Bronstein. And slowly but surely, really working to heal people. Again, it's the integration. It's the integration. After the ecstasy, the laundry, but really providing space for people to heal, myself and others. So reach out and touch someone, and I love you. The goal is soul.
Love you. All the links you need to find Dr. Benji will be at DuncanTrussell.com if you forgot those links. Thank you. You got to come back sooner than a year. This is ridiculous. Yeah. I dropped the ball.
We're going to do this sooner. You are always here. You are always there. You were always there. You never drifted.
Thank you for this. Hare Krishna.
I love you. I love you. Goal is soul.
Love you. Hmm. That was Dr. Ben Epstein, everybody. Head over to drbenji.com and you can connect to him. Check out his book, Living in the Presence, A Jewish Mindfulness Guide to Everyday Life. A big thank you to our esteemed sponsors. And thank you for listening. I love you so much. Hare Krishna.